My name is Nicole Kidman, and I've wanted to do a rom-com for so long, and along came A Family Affair. It's a great romantic comedy, and it's laugh out loud. If you feel like, I just need to curl up and watch something that feels very comforting, it's the Netflix experience. There's laughter and there's joy. That's A Family Affair.
A Family Affair, starring Nicole Kidman, Zac Efron, and Joey King. Directed by Richard LeGravenais. Rated PG-13. Sexual content, partial nudity, and some strong language. Only on Netflix, June 28th.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything. Because anything can happen after noon.
You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, how's it going?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. It is going. I am so happy to be here for this episode of the Sweep Spot Podcast.
This is episode 385.
385. That's hard to believe. That's impressive, Lynn. Good going.
Thank you. You too.
All right. In
case you're wondering who we are, we're both former Disneyland custodial cast members. And we talk Disneyland, and we host the number one Disneyland podcast hosted by two former Disneyland custodians.
Number one.
We are also authors of the books Queening the Kingdom. We have 2 different volumes out. You can get the second volume paperback on our website, thesweepspot.com, or you can get both. Well, so the second one's on our website, and that one's signed by both of us while supplies last. And we'll probably get some more back in probably in August sometime. And then we have both books on Amazon. You can get both of those not signed on Amazon in paperback. You can also find our books wherever digital copies are found, like Kindle, Apple Books. And we have both books on Audible, audio, We have both.
Easy books, for you to say.
Yeah, both books on audio. At audible.com and wherever audiobooks are found. So you can get those there. And also, we have a Patreon. If you'd like to join our Patreon, there are more and more perks. You may have heard that we have some ads within our show. And we kind of explained a little bit about it last episode, so I don't need to go into it any further. But if you want ad-free listening, you can join our Patreon. And you can, so what I'm going to do with that one, because I was trying to decide what to do, I wanted to give it ad-free versions to all the Patreons. And I thought, well, would that include the people that get the bonus episodes and the current events live access? And what I thought today, I was thinking about it, I thought, why don't we just give the ad-free to everyone that is a Patreon? Doesn't matter if you give $1 or $20 or whatever. You can have the ad-free one, but you don't get obviously you have to give $5 or more per month to get the current events access when we record those live, and also the bonus episode that we record once a month. Speaking of that, that will come out, have had come out. That just came out. So you want to listen to that. So anyways, to join that, you can go to patreon.com and search the Sweep Spot, or go to thesweepspot.com and look for the Patreon link. And like I said, for $5 or more a month, you can get those great perks and also the ad-free versions to our show. We are also going to be at the D23, the Ultimate Fan Experience. Is that right? Yeah, D23. And we will be there all 3 days, and as it gets closer, probably within a month or so before it happens, maybe 2 months before, we're going to have the times of when we're going to be at Laughing Place's booth during this event. Otherwise, we'll just be kind of around, but we will have at least a few hours each day where we will be at the booth selling both of our books. We'll be able to sign them, and I'll probably have some buttons to hand out to our listeners. So if you're going, look forward to that. I think that's all I have for this. Ken, who's our guest tonight?
Well, we're going to pretty much just kind of interview each other because we wanted to kind of explain who we are and why we're here.
Who are these guys? Yeah.
For people who don't know, I mean, if you bought the books and read through them, you have a better idea of that. If you've been listening a really long time, you've picked up on things here and there. But we kind of want to explain what we're doing and why, and just, you know, our backgrounds and things like that for some of our newer listeners, because we are trying to get newer listeners. And yeah, even if you've been listening to us for a while, you'll probably hear things you haven't heard before. Yeah. So stay tuned, and we'll it, especially if you wonder, you know, Lynn mentioned the Patreon thing with the bonus episodes. Mm-hmm. We usually talk more informally and personally during those. Those are about, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. But you'll get kind of a flavor of what those are like.
Well, before we get into that, I have a few messages. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. Contact me at lbarron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com, that's concierge.com, or thesweepspot@gmail.com.
My name is Nicole Kidman, and I've wanted to do a rom-com for so long, and along came A Family Affair. It's a great romantic comedy, and it's laugh out loud. If you feel like, I just need to curl up and watch something that feels very comforting, it's the Netflix experience. There's laughter and there's joy. That's A Family Affair.
A Family Affair, starring Nicole Kidman, Zac Efron, and Joey King. Directed by Richard LeGravenais. Rated PG-13. Sexual content, partial nudity, and some strong language. Only on Netflix, June 28th.
So on this episode, we're going to do something a little bit different, and we thought we would do something where you get to know your hosts. And it's been a while since we've kind of talked about us. It's been a while since we talked about us. No, it's been a while. It's been a while.
I want to talk about me.
Yeah. We always have guests on, and we haven't really had a lot of episodes where we talk about our experiences, and we've kind of put some of those stories within all the episodes up to this point, and in our books. But I thought we'd do something just kind of refresher and for some of the new listeners, just kind of know who we are a little bit. And we'll talk a little bit about some of our experiences and how we, how the podcast became and the books and everything. So, Ken, I'll let you start off first.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a feeling this is going to feel a little bit like our bonus episodes that our Patreon supporters get, but yeah, which is more personal. But yeah, I mean, we just assume people know who we are and why they should listen and all that sort of thing. And, you know, if you are a fan of Disneyland, past or present, this is the podcast for you. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we talk about. We talk about the past, the present, and the future of the Disneyland Resort. But, you know, we're both Southern California guys in terms of our background. I grew up about, you know, if there's no traffic, about 45 minutes from Disneyland. Of course, you know, in the later years, there was always traffic. And go maybe about once a year or so growing up. And that was, you know, 1970s, 1980s. And then I just realized this is the kind of stuff we talk about when we're guests on other people's podcasts. But, you know, it's, our own listeners should hear this stuff. Back in 1985, after a family vacation, my parents thought, okay, we've got a little money left over. Mm-hmm. So let's splurge. Let's splurge and get Disneyland annual passes. You know, back then they were like $100 a piece. Okay. $100 a piece. They got you parking, right, and they got you entry to the park during regular operating hours, which as of 1985 was 365 days per year. Mm-hmm. No other perks, no monthly payments, no discounts, no special parties, nothing like that. I think it also got you a publicity, you know, newsletter like quarterly or something like that. And it wasn't nearly as well known as it is now, you know, we're in nearly as many annual passes, but my parents' attitude was, let's get these annual passes. We'll go frequently, maybe every week or two, our kids will get their fill of Disneyland and that'll be it. We'll never have to go again.
Right.
Well, I was, friend of the show, Tony Baxter, Disney legend, retired Imagineer. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, he has a theory, the importance of being 12, and that's about how old I was back then. And I got bitten by the Disneyland bug, wanted to know the history of the place, wanted to know why things were the way they were there. And I just totally became fascinated with the history. And my parents renewed every year and we would go maybe about once a week, sometimes more often. And I remember the Disney Gallery opened above Pirates of the Caribbean, and they started selling Disneyland, the Inside Story in there, which is a magnificent book about the history of Disneyland. And they also had artwork up there that was kind of from the history of Disneyland. So that helped feed my fascination. And so, you know, I became a big, big fan of Disneyland and theme parks in general, themed entertainment. And then in 1990, I started working there while still in high school. It was actually the summer before my senior year, I believe. And I picked up a job in custodial. And by that time, I knew I wanted to be an Imagineer, basically. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I will learn how the park operates, because that'll help. You know, plus I really should get a job, and where else would I rather work, you know? So yeah, Disneyland, I didn't specifically seek out custodial. They put me in there, but I'm glad they did put me in custodial. And worked there for many years, and I'll let Lynn come in and talk a little bit.
So somewhat of a similar story. I went as a child, maybe once a year. We grew up not very far from there, maybe 20 miles. Took maybe like, yeah, about maybe like half an hour or so to get there. But we go maybe once a year. And then because it was so cheap then, we would go like for my birthday, we'd get to invite a friend or two, you know. And I think then it was like $25 a person or something. Makes us sound really old, huh? Wow, 25. Parking's not even more than that. But yeah, and then when I became a teenager, I think I was junior in high school, I got a annual pass there, and we hung out at Videopolis and stuff like that. But then, you know, I was in marching band, and we got to play there several times, and we'd go as the band and get to play around the park after you're done performing. And then we would go, let's see what happened. So then when I graduated, probably like a year later, I started working there at Plaza Inn, busing. And that was kind of the start of my Disney career, but there was a little gap in between before I went to Custodio, which didn't start till 1998. But I worked at Plaza Inn from 91 to 93. I was kind of like, for the first part of it, I was seasonal, and then they kept adding me in. So I think I was technically a seasonal, but I kept getting called in throughout the year. So, because when you're seasonal, they would ask you to return everything in, and kind of you'd have to get a new locker every season.
Yeah.
Like, but they told me, don't do that because we're going to need you, you know, more often, and we'll work on a status change or something. I don't remember how it all worked then, but so I had my same locker and everything, but sometimes it would go like, I'd go maybe a month without working, and then all of a sudden I'd get called in. But, and then summer I'd work, you know, 5-6 days a week. But I did that for 2 years, and then I left, was told to leave because I was young and dumb and made some bad choices.
you were beating up the guests, weren't you?
Yeah.
That was it.
No, I was into music a lot then, and I was in a band, and we were doing all this stuff, and I put that as a priority. So work was not, and they would keep scheduling me on a Friday or Saturday night. And so what would I do? Not go to work. So anyways, that happened. And then I did a whole bunch of little jobs in between that, and came back in 1998 after I was in a band, and we just got off a pretty big tour. We were gone for like 6 weeks, and then that band ended. And so I thought, I need to get a job. And I thought, I'll go back to Disneyland. And next thing you know, I handed my application, and they say, you're on no rehire status. And I said, oh, I forgot about that. I didn't think that would matter, you know. Uh-huh. So they said, but if you explain, you know, maybe why we should hire you back in, then we'll look it over, and we'll give you a call. I said, oh, great. So they're not going to call me, you know. So I wrote on there, I just, you know, I was young and dumb, and now I'm ready to work and be committed and blah, blah, blah. And so they did call me. They called me about a day later and asked me to come back down for an interview. And I did. And I got hired in Custodio. They said, your punishment is Custodio.
There you go. Got it. That's what you do when you screw up, right? That's the old, yeah. That's the old tale. Do you start here and work your way up? And you know?
Yeah. Otherwise I would have been in attractions, right?
Yeah.
No. So I think we both kind of ended at our beginnings in Custodio. You kind of told up to that point, but you had worked there for 8 years before we had met. So that's a while.
Yeah. Well, I worked there, all over the place, you know, in Custodio at Disneyland side, because DCA didn't exist yet. And what, in the summers, the schedule would be more stable. We would pick a summer line, it was called, you know, set days off, set start time and end time, which might actually, you could pick a shift that would give you variations because you'd be filling in for somebody else, you know, or whatever. So you might start earlier depending on the day, but I wanted stability. I worked every summer with Harry Hemhauser, who at the time was the longest tenured custodial employee or largest, you know, hourly, but the longest, at least for day custodial. And I worked for him every summer. And then, you know, my first summer I had kind of a mid shift. It was like 11 to 7:30. Mm-hmm. But every summer after that, I would have like an opening shift, like, you know, 8 or 9 or something like that. And until the summer of 96, where I had been assigned, I basically was working the Indiana Jones shift. There were two of us at a time during the day, and there were two at night that were in there sweeping the line, dumping the trash cans, checking the restrooms that are there near the station, which guests can use if they're in a pinch, but it's really meant for cast members. And they were desperate for foremen, for leads, because of some shenanigans. So a bunch of people had lost their radio. So they were desperate enough to make me a lead. But based on lead seniority, that meant I would be doing closing shifts most of the time for a while.
Yep.
So that was in, you know, during the summer of 96. And so I became a lead after that and quickly started just getting lead shifts all the time. But, you know, I was back to being a closing lead or closing shifts, you know, shifts like, you know, 4 or 5 to 1:30, 5 p.m., you know, 4 p.m., 5 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. So that was interesting. eventually, though, in 2000, I picked up another job, and that became my main job. And I thought I was going to have to just quit Disneyland outright. But this other job had a 4-day schedule on Monday through Thursday, 10-hour days. And so, now what happened was their supervisors and schedulers said, "Hey, you can still work here. You can work Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and any like Monday holidays or any mid, you know, whatever holidays there would be, you'd be off from your other job. You could still work here." And I was like, okay. I hadn't counted on that, you know, so that was nice because that was like extra money. Plus, I liked the perks of being a cast member.
Oh, yeah.
And I was still looking for, I still wanted to be an Imagineer. You know, I had actually, that's funny that I mentioned the summer of 96 before. In the spring of 96, I had interned for what at the time was the largest independent theme park design firm in the world. I interned there, didn't get hired because I was terrible. No, I just actually, I think it's because they weren't hiring. But I also was finishing up my classes in college. And so anyway, so there was a lot of change back then. But you know, so still didn't land a job. So 2000 comes around. It's like, I've got to find a job that gets me more money and broadens my experiences, you know? So I picked up another job, but I was able to still work at Disneyland on the weekends. And they knew they counted, like Mary Cobb would be one of our managers. And if she needed to cut hours because attendance was down for the day or whatever, she knew I would ER. She wouldn't even ask. She would just tell me, "Oh, okay, you're leaving today at 11 or whatever in the middle of the day," because I just cared about still being a cast member. I wasn't desperate for the hours, and you know, often they'd cut my hours and I'd just hang out or whatever, you know. But I was working day shifts again because that was in line with my other job. And so I said, I can't work closing shifts if I've got this other job, you know, because I got to get up. So they accommodated me really well for about 5 years. And you know, yes, I was working about 7 days a week for 5 years. If I wanted a day off, I had to really put in, you know, weeks in advance and say, I need this day off for this, or I would call in sick. They did have to schedule me five shifts or whatever, during summer. Spring break, 2 weeks of spring break and 2 weeks of the Christmas week, you know, the winter holidays. Mm-hmm. But they knew I was going to call in sick because they knew I wasn't going to, you know, miss my other job to come work at Disneyland, you know. So I kept my attendance good enough because we were on a point system, and I kept my attendance good enough that I could do that. I could have I'd call in sick back to back, you know, 2 weeks in a row. I'd show up for my other shifts, you know, the shifts that didn't conflict with my job. So they knew. They would schedule me like closing undistributed shifts. You know, they have these shifts called undistributed so that when you come in, you were sent to fill a vacancy because for someone else being out sick or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they just knew I wasn't going to show up. So, and that worked for 5 years. And then finally it was like, no, we need everybody to work full time in the summer. This was going to be the golden anniversary, the summer of 2005. And so I reluctantly had to leave, you know, and I was looking for other jobs in the company, filling out applications, all that sort of thing. Had some interviews over the years. Some of them might've been before I left and some were after I left, and didn't get them. Now I've got, you know, over 24 years of, continuous experience at my other job. Yeah. not the same exact job. I've taken a couple of promotions over the years and been moved around, but same overall organization. Mm-hmm. So never did become an Imagineer. There's still time, I guess. But my love of theme parks and Disneyland history, I also really like animation and stuff like that, you know, special effects and things like that. I mean, I liked special effects back before everything was digital. But that all has informed me, you know, along with our experiences working there, for doing this podcast and for writing our books, you know.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the undistributed shifts they would give you, because there was one time I think you hadn't called in sick yet, but I had an opening shift like in Esplanade or something else, and that for some reason they had you as opening restroom lead, and I thought, that's weird, why would they put Ken at rest? He never goes on, you know, you don't usually like to work on restrooms, and they had you as, I think maybe they had moved you from undistributed or something. It was a day shift that was weird, and then I looked, and then what's his last name?
Which one? Off,
Greg, not.
Oh, Cox, Greg King.
King. Yeah, Greg. He had said, do you want to go to restrooms instead of Esplanade? You get more money. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, sure. Yeah, I'd do that. So he said, yeah, I don't think Ken's coming. He hasn't called in, but I don't think he's coming in. And then you had called like 10 minutes later, kind of sitting in the conference room, and then, all right, Lynn, he called, you're on.
Yeah, I would usually try to call in as early as I could.
But it was a little bit, it was probably, I think, because Esplanade comes on at 5, and I think that you had, I think it was right around that time, 5:30, and you weren't opening, you were like the east, you know, like the second restroom lead, so yeah.
Yeah, they would pay the restrooms would get a small extra amount. Mm-hmm. And the restroom lead would also get a small extra amount. So sometimes people would say they, you know, if they're trying to make a little bit extra, they would like want that shift for months on end, you know, or whatever. I didn't really care about getting that little extra.
But it added up, especially if you had a lead shift as in restrooms, then it did kind of add up more. Because in the beginning I was kind of getting half lead, half regular shifts, and so when I had a lead shift, then I was like, ooh, you know, that was a big jump for me from a regular to lead shift. But anyways, yeah, I started, like I said, in 98 in custodial, and then became a lead in 2000. And that was before DCA, but had opened, because I remember working with some of the guys that were, that had eventually went over there. But then when California Venture was getting ready to open, that's when our seniority changed. And I started getting, because at that point I was only getting lead shifts maybe on the weekends, and they were closing shifts. And I had two summers in a row closing Adventureland. And I had, I think it was 2000 and then 2001 summer. I don't know, something like that. Yeah. And then I started getting opening shifts after that. And, you know what, now I look back at it, most of the good memories I have were some of the closing shifts that I had. I don't know. It just, there's something about, even as a guest going to Disneyland at night, there's something special about being there at night. And I think that also goes for working there. I mean, sometimes it was kind of a bummer. You get off at, 1:30, and by the time I get home, it'd be 2:00.
Right. Yeah. Practically speaking, it could be nice because you could take care of some errands
mm-hmm.
before your shift.
Yeah. Appointments and things
during the week or whatever. Often if we were working full time, we would often have like a couple of weekdays off, or depending on the time of year, sometimes it would be, 7 days a week, 6 days a week or whatever. I totally know what you mean. I would work in those closing shifts. I think I started setting my alarm for like 9 a.m. most days, because I said, if I just sleep, I don't want to sleep. I don't want to like sleep so much and then have to turn right around and go back for my shift. So it's like, I should get more sleep than that. But I was young enough where it was like, no, I'm going to set my alarm for 9. I'm going to get up because I got things to do, because, if it's like a 5:00 shift, or 4, might be 4:00 or whatever. We get overtime a lot as leads. Because it just made sense to have like an opening lead and a closing lead. And sometimes to cover that, you needed extra hours for them rather than have a third person that, bridges that. I would just, you think about it, like if you're starting at 4, mm-hmm. I'd have to start getting ready, got to shave. When I started, men weren't allowed facial hair. The women, yes, no, but the men were not allowed facial hair when I started. Even then, when they were, it was like you could have a mustache, but you can't really. So it was like, all right, I got to shave and shower and all that, and then get dressed, drive to Casper Parking, wherever it was at the time, and then go in, get in, change into my costume, because I'd never adopted the, what do they call that? Fast track. I never adopted that. Wear your costume home or take it home or whatever. Cause when I started, you get fired if you got caught taking a costume piece out. Well, right. Back in my day, we weren't allowed to do that. They would kick you right out and fire you and send you to Siberia. It just eats up a lot of time. If you got to start getting ready at like 2 or,
it was 2 hours before my shift. I would have to get in the shower and, get ready and everything. So, and then I would have to leave. That takes 30 minutes. And then I would have to leave an hour and a half early, because you never knew, especially if you started, like you said, at 4 or 5, how's the traffic going to be at,
That's the other factor. You got to give yourself time because of the traffic.
Yeah. Now going home is not a problem, but
no.
with the early shift, sometimes like a 9 to 5:30, you're kind of dealing with traffic on both ends, but, but those closing shifts, once you're there, like you said, so it sometimes would take, sometimes 45 minutes to an hour to get there. And then you have 30 minutes to get on the shuttle, get to change into your clothes, and get to the office in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I always made, I mean, most of the time, like 98% of the time, I always made it because I like to leave myself enough extra time. But sometimes you wouldn't, you know, you just, you couldn't help it. But
you mentioned no traffic. Hold your thought. Hold, I think if you have a thought, you mentioned no traffic. At 1:30, I would go. I got it. Sometimes I decided that was going to be when I was going to do my grocery shopping.
Oh,
because the supermarket was open 24 hours. And I'm like, I don't have to deal with a lot of other people, you know, I would just have to deal with boxes cluttering the aisles, you know? So it would be like, I'd go straight from Disneyland to do my grocery shopping, and then go home, you know?
So, good. Yeah. Smart. Yeah. Yes. I really look back at those, closing shifts and just really enjoyed those, a lot of nights, especially during the week when I, you know, during the week when you were working there with me, you weren't working, but I would get those closing shifts, like, and the park would close at 8 o'clock a lot of the time during the year, except for like spring break, Christmas. And that was basically it. It wasn't all this extra, you know, things that they had, maybe a special event here and there, but most of the time the park would close at 8 o'clock. And so the close of the shift would be 1 to 9:30, and from about 1 to maybe 5, I wouldn't be a lead. I think I get paid lead. I can't remember, but I wasn't. I just kind of roam around and just, you know, talk to the current lead that was there, and then when he would go home, or sometimes some of the leads would go, here, you're in charge now, and they'd go disappear. But the day leads that open. But yeah, that's it. Our shift would be 1 to 9:30. And you remember that. We get to clean out the pirate boats or the logs at Splash. Yeah. And those are always kind of
fun. Anytime anytime the park would close before midnight, we were responsible for by we, I mean the day custodial, not overnight graveyard, third shift night custodial. The day custodial would be responsible for pirate boats and Splash Mountain logs.
If you were overworking
that area. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, was it Frontier Adventureland for pirate boats?
New
Orleans Critter Country for the.
It was funny because pirates. the coverage of pirates was divided and kind of shifted over the years.
Yeah.
There was the New Orleans Critter Country foreman and there was the Adventureland Frontierland foreman. And who was responsible for what at pirates kind of shifted over the years, you know. Because you had the line had to be swept, the trash cans in the inside and the trash cans in the outside had to be dumped, and boats had to be cleaned if there was a some sort of issue there.
Yeah.
And I think most of the time I was there, the boats were the New Orleans Critter Country lead's responsibility. You know, either they could do it themselves or they could send somebody, you know, to go. And that usually meant riding around and on a trip, to get the boat clean, because it wasn't pulled off. It was just kept, they said, we're not going to put guests in this boat because somebody threw up in there, you know? So we're going to, we would go in there and clean it up. And but it was just kind of split the responsibilities between the Adventure and the New Orleans. Now, so New Orleans had the boats for during the day, but at night, you know, it was closing time. It was like Adventure's responsibility to go clean the boats out, you know. So that was kind of an interesting dichotomy. The New Orleans Critter Country that also had the splash logs, you know, to do in terms of during the day, like if there was a log that, you know, needed to be cleaned out, they would pull those off to the side. So that was easier to handle.
Yeah, when we say clean the boats, the main thing was to get the trash out of the boats. There are a lot of maps and things would sit,
yes,
because those boats would, I don't think they would leak as much as the fact that splash water over 12 hours or more.
Yeah.
You know, going into the boat would accumulate by the end of the night. And sometimes we'd have big puddles in the bottom of them. Then we'd have to suck that water out, and the maps and every trash and napkins would get all soggy in the bottom and everything. And yeah. And then the lead was in charge of, once those boats were clear of us out of them and we got everything done, then we'd tell the cast member that would be up in the control station, you know, we'd say clear, and then they'd push the button and the next one would come in, and we'd do over and over. Wouldn't we tie a pro towel to the first one so we knew?
Yeah, we'd tie it up at the front so that we knew where to stop.
right.
Yeah.
Sometimes we forget to do that, and then we'd have to, like, wait a minute, I think we did this one. It looks good.
Yeah. but to do that, I mean, you kind of had to make sure the rest of your area was good.
Or you'd leave someone. Yeah, or you'd leave someone out of
boats. You would have somebody out checking. Yeah. Yeah, that was, I mean, gosh. By the way, shameless plug time. We wrote two books about our time in Disneyland Custodial. And so a lot of this kind of stuff we cover in the books. Those are the books you hear us mention at the opening of the show. We say, look, we've authors of two books called Cleaning the Kingdom. So yeah, though, if you've never bought them, you know, we didn't write them to get rich. You don't make money doing that, writing nonfiction books, you know, unless you were a president or something, you're not gonna make any money. You're running a school textbook that, you know, thousands of schools use. So yeah, when we talk about our books, that's what, you know, the books are chock full of that information, you know, our memoirs of working. The first one is really our memoir, the two of us. And then the second one is more other people's stories. But yeah, so if you haven't checked them out, you really should. Shameless plug. Paperback, Kindle, audiobook. But yeah.
Yeah.
Explains who we are and how we got there and why we do that. I mean, it kind of, not directly, but it kind of explains why we do this podcast, you know? So.
Yeah. You had said that we didn't write them to get rich, but for some reason we did. No, we didn't.
Yeah. We're living in the life of luxury here.
Look at this studio, Ken.
this spread, I mean, goodness sakes, these shrimp cocktail over here and this filet mignon and goodness, these, look at these wines over here. You've got, you know, it's the envy of any wine collector.
Yeah. Let's get this cleaned up over here. All right. Thank you. So we worked there. We could go on and on about our stories working there and some of the fun stuff. And like you mentioned, a lot of that's in our books. Not all of it, but what we could remember was in our books. So every now and then
doesn't incriminate us too much.
right. Every now and then we'll have a guest on that maybe we worked with, and I'll go, oh yeah, I forgot about that. You know, it kind of spark up some memories that maybe we didn't think of when we were writing the books. But go ahead.
Yeah. Are you trying to wrap this up? I mean,
no.
Oh, okay.
What I'm trying to do is move into,
go ahead.
Because you and I had become friends during, so when I started in 98, you were lead and I wasn't, but I think we kind of, you know, would talk now and then when I'd work with you. But when we really became friends was when I became the lead, because then we would have roll call in the morning and our night, and then we'd have lunches and things, and we'd kind of meet up and chat, or even just walking out to our lockers, our areas, you know, we would just chat a little bit in the morning. But that's when we became really good friends. And then, you left me, and in 2005, but I stayed about 2 years more. I just couldn't take it any longer without you there. So, So during that time, yeah, I stayed till 2007 and then moved to Utah where I am now. But during that time, after I had left, you and I still had talked and, you know, still friends, but I'd started this podcast in 2011, early 2011. And
wow.
So that was what, like 4 years later after I had left Disney. And so we, you know, it was still fresh in my mind and I kind of missed going to Disneyland. Even up to that point, between 2007 and 11, I would still go to Disneyland, but maybe like once a year, maybe twice. But my son was still very young at that time. So I think we would only go like once.
Well, and Disneyland's no place for children. I mean,
no, yeah, it was kind of hard going taking a kid there. No, but no, we would only go maybe once or twice a year. You know, we live 6 hours away drive. But anyways, I started the podcast and you were my first choice, but the contract, you did not agree to the contract. And so I had to have you as a part of
my agent.
Yeah, it did not work out. So, but no, and I worked, you know, we worked with many people and we kind of got to know who was into the history and really appreciated Disneyland for what it is, more than just a workplace or a fun place to be with your friends, which is fine, but that's not, you know, Ken and I were different. And so when Ken couldn't commit to the podcast, I said, well, we'll have you on as a guest now and then. And so I thought of who could I have? And I remembered Laura was a lead and she and I would talk about stuff and point out things, history and stuff. So I asked her. And so we did the show up into about episode 100, I believe. But you are on there in between that. I would say you probably came on at least 10 times in that time period of those.
It's frequent guest, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know how many years that was.
Special guest star. Yeah, that was fun being a guest. I'm glad you brought that up. We used to work in neighboring area, like you would have New Orleans Critter and I would have Adventure Frontier or vice versa, you know. So we would basically have the same start and, you know, go to roll call and we would go to lunch or, you know, whatever. That was great because neighboring, well, first of all, leads would help each other out anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I'm covering something over here. Can you handle that call? It's not too far from your area, you know? But you know, being buddies was good. And then staying in contact and all that. And you're right. I mean, both of us being interested in, kind of the history of everything, and attending certain events like the Sherman Brothers presentation and book signing. And
that was great.
I mean, that was, because there's people who work there who just really couldn't care less. You know, it's their job. It's just their job. They might provide great guest service.
Oh yeah.
But because they don't want the guests to have a bad time, you know, but they just really couldn't care less and it's just a job and that's it. But, you know, you have people like us who are just, you know, into the whole history of it all and, like to make magic. And I was still hoping to work for the company in a quote unquote professional capacity, you know, by that, I mean, creative.
Yeah.
I would collect the Disneyland line every week. It was the cast member newsletter. And I'd always get probably a couple copies of that because I knew someday somebody's going to want the extra copy. And I was a collector. And when I did quit, I bought an annual pass and resumed my time as an annual pass holder. Even though I probably could have pestered people to sign me in, you know, I wanted me and my family. I was living in Anaheim, and actually I've lived in Anaheim my entire post Disneyland time.
You've lived closer to Disneyland when you weren't working there than when you were.
Yeah. So, but you know, so it was convenient for me and my And then my kids, when they aged up and needed a pass, you know, to have passes and go and stuff like that. So, yeah, I've just been biding my time waiting to get my hands on your Disney book collection.
Yeah, so that is quite the collection. That started before I even worked there. I was interested in Disney history. So I was actually one of the first books I bought. I was working there at the time. It was the Window on Main Street book. It was when the bookstore was across the street, part of the Emporium.
Yeah, they did. They carried a bunch of books over there.
Yeah, I remember that. That was one of the first books I started getting in, like reading behind the scenes, kind of hearing, you know, reading about it. And then, of course, David Koenig's books came out and I started reading more about that. And that was after I had worked there. But I was, yeah, those kind of sparked my interest as far as getting to know who were the people behind some of the rides and how a lot of it worked and all that. But that kind of sparked my interest into wanting to do a pod or to find what podcasts were, because I didn't even really know what they were. And I think I had tried to listen to a few and I don't know, that's not for me. But then I found a Disneyland one that was called Wedway Radio, and that was with Nate Parrish and Matt Parrish. But the started listening to them a lot, and they're really into the history. Like, they really appreciate it, and I think they put on a real good show. So I kind of got to know them just asking them questions and things. And then Nate had helped me set up the podcast onto the server that we had at the time. And just up into a week or so ago. But so that kind of got my interest going. And then, like I said, we had Laura on for a while, and then you came on. And then I think it was when you joined full time was that we had more time to talk, you know, when we weren't recording, but we were chatting. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think you had brought up about the book. And I think you'd first joked about it, like, hey, we should do a book. But I was thinking, yeah, that would be cool. And then we kind of just started putting stuff together. And you had already kind of had some written out already that you had done articles for Laughing Place, I believe.
Yep.
And yeah, so then it just kind of started falling together, and, you know, we started coming up with topics and chapter ideas and things.
And I was like, do we really have an, I'm thinking, do we really have enough for a book here? And then,
wow. Yeah.
And then when we put it all together, it was, you know, ended up being over 400 pages.
Yeah. Like 460 pages. We had enough for two just in that first book, but.
But we didn't want to skimp, you know, we didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't want to, you know.
Well, we thought it would be our only book. At that time, we thought, we'll get a book.
Well, you don't really, yeah. It's the closest we'll ever get to giving birth, you know, is putting together that book. But yeah, I mean, it's the podcast. See, I've been involved in online communications regarding Disney stuff. I'll give you an idea. My first modem was, I think, a 1200 baud modem. You know, yes, I'm old, but you know, when I first started, there was a bulletin board service. This is before everybody had access to the internet, right? It was you would dial up with your phone. You had a modem that would use your phone line to dial in, and there was a thing called Mouse Ears BBS bulletin boards. BBS is a bulletin board service. And it's actually, if you can find a copy of Mickey is 60 magazine from 1988, mm-hmm. it mentions Mouse House in there. Mouse Ears. Mouse House was another one that came about. But, you know, there were these bulletin board services back in the day before the internet. And some of them at the time, you could only one person could call into it at a time. So you'd call in, you'd read the forums, you would leave your messages if you wanted. And then you would hang up and somebody else could get through, and, you know, but so I've been involved in, and then, you know, then of course came the Usenet and these internet forums where it would just be, it's all text and everything. So yeah, so the early days of Mouse Ears, there's one called Mickey's Kingdom, one called Mouse House. I know the people who ran Mickey's Kingdom and Mouse House. I know I'm still connected with them on Facebook. But then, of course, you had the internet, which, you know, everything expanded like crazy. This is before podcasts. I remember when Laughing Place started, and I encouraged Doobie to add discussion forums to that. This is before Facebook, you know, before Facebook had a million Disney groups and all that sort of thing. But, you know, wow. So I've been involved in online communications for a long time. Podcasting is kind of the successor to that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I started the podcast, my goal was to talk, because we did history segments, like, you know, one episode was the history of, say, Space Mountain. But my goal was to talk about every attraction that ever existed in Disneyland, current and past and current attractions. And so I think up to this point, I think we're pretty close. I think there's about, well, there's been new attractions added since, but if not counting like Galaxy's Edge or any of the new one in Toontown, and just Disneyland Park, I think we only have a couple, like three or four left. So, and they're all the hard ones, like the Disneyland Railroad and Pirates of the Caribbean. So,
yeah,
and Utopia, I think, is another one. But anyway, so that was the goal. But then when we started progressing and getting to know more people, and then one guest leads to another guest and another, and in social media, you meet people. Then we started having more and more guests, which has been a lot of fun. Yeah. Talking to former cast members, authors, other podcasters. You know, we met Jim Corcus, and I had listened to WDW Radio with Lou Mangiello. I listened to that podcast. I wasn't as much into Disney World, but I did appreciate the history of it and learned a lot about Disney World from that podcast. But he every now and then would talk about Disneyland, but they had a guy there named Jim Corcus, and I thought, this guy is really interesting. He'd go on and on forever about these things, the history of these attractions and our time periods or whatever. And he just seemed like a lot of fun. So I kind of found a way to reach out to him, and we were able to have Jim on along for a lot of episodes. And so that helped too with getting to know more guests like Jim and others. We've had repeated, you know, Imagineers on. We think I've had Bob Gurr on our show four times. The first time we had him on, we did like a three-part series with Bob Gurr. And then, so if you want to go back and hear those, I don't remember the name when they were, but they were in somewhere in the first 100. And then, you know, then when you came on full time, we had Bob Gurr on again. And I think the time that we recorded that one was the day that Tony Baxter got his window dedicated at Disneyland.
That was quite a day, because I went to the window dedication, mm-hmm. and then we had some festivities after that, and then we all went to dinner, and the night was continuing. But Corey and I, you know, my wife and I bowed out.
Yeah,
because I had to get home to record with Bob Gurr, and I thought, what a life!
Yeah.
Sorry, I gotta stop hanging out with one Disney legend and go interview another one.
Right.
And I'm like, this is great. This is wonderful. You know, little did I know way back in the day that, you know, be doing this. So.
Yeah, isn't it? It's been. You know, and we had Rolly Crump, and that was
yes.
100 episodes, I think. And we've had a lot of Disney legends on. We've had a lot of, you know, Imagineers on, former Imagineers. So it's just been amazing over the years to have all these people. You can go back and find all these episodes. At one point, I had an idea, and I still have the idea, but it takes a lot of work unless someone wants to do this for me. But yeah. Maybe I'll give you some free books or something. But
Lynn puts a lot of work into this.
So. This idea and if someone wants to do this, reach out to me. But I wanted to put all the podcasts in categories. So like Jim Corcus podcasts, the series, so numbers, number, you know, episode 50, 72, I know. And then put like Disney, former Imagineers, you know, and put all the different interviews there. And so that way we have like an index on our website of what, so if you wanted to listen to a show by a former cast member, you can go to that list and listen to something, you know, or you wanted to listen to some of the Jim Corcus episodes, you can find all those. So anyways, that's my idea to do that. And I started it, but it's a lot of work. You have to go through this whole list of, you know, at to this point, even counting the short, the, not the bonus, the mini episodes, and then the current event episodes, which we don't number. You have to go through like 450 episodes to get this all figured out. So that's eventually that will happen, unless someone wants to step up and help. That would be great. And so anyways, yeah, we've just been really blessed to have so many people on, and just it's just grown and grown, and it's something that Ken and I enjoy doing every time. I've done other podcasts and been guests and did a podcast with concierge, and as much as those are fun to do, nothing beats the time when Ken and I get to sit down and talk to someone or talk amongst ourselves. That's always a favorite time of the month where we do these. So it's just been a lot of fun, and we have no intentions of stopping anytime soon, but we need to finish up those episodes, those history ones I keep talking about. So
we're not only no intention of stopping, we're actively trying to reach out and expand in terms of getting more listeners.
Yeah.
You know, you've taken steps for that, you know, changing where our archive is, and we're trying to reach out to more people, because when people do hear the podcast, they talk about some of the things they like about it a lot, you know, the topics we cover, the insights we have, because, you know, as custodial people, we went everywhere. We saw how the park functioned. We went everywhere that we could, behind the scenes and on, as well as on stage. And, you know, we got some insights into how the park works and what's successful and what might be challenging and all that sort of thing. And so people like listening to this, and I'm humbled by that. And, you know, if more people find out about us and give us a try, more people might listen regularly.
And the goal isn't necessarily to have more listeners for ourselves. I think a lot about, because I think if I enjoy this, listening to these guests or our discussion topic, I'm pretty sure there's others out there that would enjoy it that have the same interests in Disneyland and stuff. And a lot of times there's a lot of great podcasts out there, but there's a lot that don't do what we're doing that. And I just want as many people to hear these stories, because especially the cast member stories, you can't get those anywhere else. I mean, you could hear some of these same guests on another podcast, but you're not going to hear the same questions that we would ask. And I find it very special. And these are people's lives, and they've invested in working at Disneyland, and we're bringing these stories back up. And so a lot of these people, it's the only time they will ever do a podcast is when we talk to them, and they just get so excited. A lot of times we'll get done recording. Everyone's heard us do these interviews, but after we get done, a lot of times they're very thankful, and sometimes they're a little apprehensive when I ask them, like, oh, okay, you know, I guess. But then after it's over, they're like, wow, thank you. That was so much fun. You know, you brought up a lot of fun memories. So that's what we're trying to do here mainly, is to preserve these stories for future people. And and I think as long as these podcasts are in this sort of form, I think they'll be around. And I try to, you know, to save all these. I have backups of them, and so.
Yeah. The people we'll talk with, I mean, range from, you know, somebody worked in a store there, some, I mean, just think about the variety of people we talk with, you know, decorating stores, or they worked in guest relations, or they ended up being an ambassador. Yeah. Or, you know, they, of course, they worked in Imagineering, or they
musicians. We've had musicians.
Risk management for the company, you know, for the corporation. Risk management.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we the musicians, really, it's a wide variety, because we're trying to get as many different perspectives as possible. Mm-hmm. And often we'll ask sometimes we'll pose the same questions to different people. You know, were you there? You know, you were there these years. Were you there for like the Rick D's Halloween party in 1984? Right. You know, because I want to get different perspectives. Even if I know the gist of what happened for that event, I want to get somebody else's perspective on it. You know?
Yeah, because not everyone was in the exact same place. I mean, you and I worked at the same time period, but we weren't in the exact same areas, you know, so right. We have different stories. So yeah, it's been really good. And so if there's a topic that you want us to discuss that we haven't yet, I've had a couple of people reach out. Someone reached out, you know, and they wanted to hear more about the Tomorrowland 98 refurbishment, and we did talk about that. So if you have something you'd like us to talk about, we will definitely do that, because we're running out of topics. No, because
we need ideas. No.
No, we're trying to, I have a lot, but I'm trying to make, you know, I'm trying to please the listeners, because that's what it's about, right? So thank you so much for putting up with this last hour of us just going on and on about the good old days, but they really were, and they still are, good days as we continue to record this podcast. Okay. What a great guest we had again.
Yeah, I could listen to those guys forever. I could listen to them go on and on and on. But seriously, thank you for still listening. We always have things to say here at the outro, the conclusion of the episode. We are trying to reach more people, and you know, the ads that are running are going to cover expenses, hopefully. And you want the ad free versions, do the Patreon thing. But
yeah,
thank you so much. And if you like the way we were talking, and you're not yet a Patreon supporter, consider becoming one, because you'll get those bonus episodes that do kind of sound a little like that.
For sure. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and we'll have to do that periodically again. And if you'd like to leave a review, this is where we usually leave or read the reviews of our show. So if you listen on Apple Podcasts, which is the one I use, I usually just read from that. It seems to be the most popular one that gets downloaded. Until there's another way to read, because I tried to look on Spotify to see where you can leave a review. So if someone knows how that's done, let me know, but I haven't been able to see that. But for now, we just read Apple reviews, and we don't have a new one yet, so that means that we need you to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. We really appreciate it. And check out our website. We always have our show notes, and we have links to our books, and we have shirts on there you can buy, and a whole bunch of things you can check out on our website. You can join our Patreon there. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk with you next time.
My name is Nicole Kidman, and I've wanted to do a rom-com for so long, and along came A Family Affair. It's a great romantic comedy, and it's laugh out loud. If you feel like, I just need to curl up and watch something that feels very comforting, it's the Netflix experience. There's laughter and there's joy. That's A Family Affair.
A Family Affair, starring Nicole Kidman, Zac Efron, and Joey King. Directed by Richard LeGravenaise. Rated PG-13. Sexual content, partial nudity, and some strong language. Only on Netflix, June 28th.
She said, get out the chat room and clean mine. The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.